Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Howdy, Watchers. It's Dan, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. It's a little surreal that we're already at 33 episodes. Thanks for sticking with us. First up this week, Nine and I give our feedback for the puppetastic saga The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, available on Netflix. This feedback segment does get a bit spoilery and, believe it or not, controversial, so please be warned if you are trying to avoid spoilers, puns, and the cultural significance of puppet love. We also want to warn you for some odd notes about a particular Star Wars director, a specific Beatle, an unnecessary Bring Skeksy Back cover by me, and a comparative analysis of the show's plot with various political institutions, stances, and conspiracies. Then, we try to save the world with comedy, as I pitch a 2021 offbeat Bo Burnham comedy special Inside, also available on Netflix. It could open my eyes, don't you know? We want to apologize for a few audio garbles that occurred during recording and hope that edits minimize their effect. If this podcast is the best or worst thing you've ever heard, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook page, you'll probably get a witty or informative response from one of us if that's the thing you want. Finally, if you have a show or a movie you want us to watch, please leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, watchers, welcome to the internet, where it's us and our microphones, you and your podcast listening device, as the Lord intended. Let's go!
Hello, this is Scott, and we are here for the feedback for the Netflix series, The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. This is a TV series that is set in the same world as the Jim Henson movie, The Dark Crystal, which was released in the mid-80s, and this series was, I believe it was released in 2019. So, Dan and Nyan, what did you think of The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance?
I feel like this is a Dan show.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that. Long story short, after watching episodes one and then three, I did go back and watch two because there was some little small things I had questions about, which okay. I'm sure Scott could have answered for me. But I went back and watched episode two, and I think that most people would probably be able to pick up on some of the nuances, specifically with Hup, for example, and how Hup came to be, to be joining the journey, as they say. So that's the one small thing I had questioned about. But for the most part, you know, Scott's recommendation, I think, was pretty sound. There's, again, because this is a prequel, there needs to be a little bit more exposition because they have to set the tone of the universe, which you also would get in the movie, right? But you also have to send it here for now because it's a different chronological age of the planet itself. So definitely a lot of understandings there. So as far as, you know, overall, I think that I probably will go on to finish it just as a precursor to all the commentary we're going to have. I just don't know when I'll get to it. There's a lot of content at the time recording that's kind of going over the place. So I probably will go finish it. I just know when it will happen. So, but I probably will want to do a Dark Crystal movie watch at some point after this, just to kind of reconnect things in my head from when I last watched it, which is probably, I probably was drinking at the time when I was watching that movie in college. So yeah, almost definitely for sure. I think that I like to compare the very beginning, and this is a good reason why 90 say this is a Dan T series, is that the opening with the narration and the way they approach everything is 100% so similar to the way the original Dune was done. They do a lot of planetary focuses, zoom in, zoom outs, you know, a little bit of montage, very moving, you know, overture and soundtrack that's playing underneath that, basically. But it really kind of brings you into that world. And I think that, you know, as many people hate, you know, that original Dune movie because it was kind of, you know, campy or cheesy or whatever the case is, that's one of the few things that many people feel they did right and actually have done better than the newest release that just came recently from Denis Villeneuve. And, you know, I think that that's very interesting in how you set a world. I mean, world building is one of the hardest things to do, I feel, across the board here. Like, if you're coming from, you know, a comics-based kind of TV series movie, you at least have some basis on what to kind of put forth. You know, oh, this is what happens. Oh, we had to see the pearls fall down on the ground again. We got to see Bruce's parents die again. And, you know, here it's you don't have this prior knowledge. You kind of, unless you've seen the movie, and even then, because this is so far, you know, in the past, I think that there is a lot that they need to kind of set the groundwork on,
which and actually ties really well into my note, which is holy exposition Batman.
That's but perfect. So for the record, now we've now bridged the gap, and we now have all the Batmans, including the ones that are on the planet Thra.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, yes, yes.
Wow. I mean, I didn't even think that was possible, but we're breaking ground on this episode. But I totally get it. Yeah, for sure. But I would imagine just the nature of the show being all puppets and doing a lot of world building to set everything up was quite a monumental undertaking.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I had a really awful day before I started that first episode. So it was a little slow when I first came into it. But, you know, by the time I got to the end of episode one and the start of episode three, it started to kind of really reel me in at that point. But I think for some people that are not used to this kind of world building storytelling, they might have a little bit of a hard time with it. So doing the 1-3 jump might be great for those people, because you see there's a lot more kinds of, I'd say, I wouldn't say action per se, but I'd say more compelling scenes that happen, you know, at towards the end of episode one and also episode three. So I think you're seeing the journey progress. You're seeing the more cast of characters coming together, and I think that that's, you know, good for a lot of people out there that might not like the level of exposition might be deemed as holy.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to pick one of the later episodes to move things along. And it really does pick up steam the farther it goes, and it's in terms of the story and the action that is going on and how each of the different storylines expand as the series goes along towards the end. So I'm glad you're able to pick up on that. And I knew there would be a couple of things that might be a little unexplained, but I think it shows how things are starting to develop, which is what I wanted to try to, I think that they were
minor. I think there's a lot of kind of items that kind of get maybe expanded on a little bit more, especially for example, you know, when they're in the tent and, you know, she switches the T's and whatnot, there's a whole sequence of things that happens, but I think you kind of get the gist of what's happening. And I feel that, you know, that you don't lose a terrible amount, but if you're a purist, then maybe you would want to just go through 1-3, but yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually thought this was one of the times where it wasn't too much of a detriment in terms of skipping that second episode, because I do think there was stuff that could be gleaned by watching the second episode, and that's worth it. But when I jumped from 1-3, I didn't feel like I'd lost enough, right? Yeah. Like to the point where I was completely lost. And so that, Scott, I think picking 1-3 wasn't, in my opinion, wasn't a bad idea in this particular situation, because I think it did carry the steam you mentioned, and it did ultimately. It wasn't so disjointed. So I think it worked. I think that worked in this case.
Cool. Yeah.
In terms of understanding the story.
Yeah.
So do we want to move on to a commentary about how Ryan is not a specific director that we know?
Let's do that. And then I've got some other stuff, but yes, please talk to me. Talk to me all about it, because we're clearly on the same page.
Yeah. So the second I saw how his name was spelled, I'm like, oh Lord, here we go. I wasn't triggered, but I had a little bit of a traumatic flashback to The Last Jedi, full disclosure or whatnot. So
I was so psyched I had subtitles on to see that.
But I think in The Dark Crystal, they pronounce it Rion. And
right.
You'd have to avoid the lawsuit.
That's a very good point. And does the director pronounce his name Ryan?
I'm pretty sure everyone I've heard that made comments about him as director have referred to him as Rian Johnson and not Rian Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Yeah. So that was kind of a funny coincidence. But were there, oh, nine, you said you wanted to bring up a couple other things?
Oh, are we going to go further into the Ryan Johnson rabbit hole? Because, like, how hard do they trash this dude?
Well, I mean, think of it this way. I mean, you know, Rion as a character, you know, he has, you know, Gurgeon and you know, firmly in his camp, and obviously, you know, his unfortunately lost love as well in his camp. But the majority of the rest of the people, they don't seem to think very highly of him. And this kind of almost 50-50 of people that are important to him is very reminiscent of how people feel about Rian Johnson. You know, Rian Johnson, when he made The Last Jedi, he said, well, I don't expect everyone to love this. I fully expect this to fully divide the viewer. And that's my intent when making this movie. And so in some ways, I mean, but again, Rian here is a little bit more unknowing. He wants to do good. He wants to do right by his heritage, by his lineage, by his people. Whereas Rian Johnson is not necessarily in that same camp. So if I had to choose between the two of them, I'm team Rian all the way over Rian Johnson.
That Fair makes enough. Sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not as mad at Rian Johnson as everyone else is, because I just watched all the Star Wars and I was like, cool, give me more Star Wars. But that was just so, it felt too obvious to me to not be a dig in some way, shape, or form. I don't even know if the timelines work out, but I thought it was hilarious.
Well, Last Jedi came out before them, because Rise of Skywalker was 2019. So it would have been 3 years prior to that.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting.
But when they were writing this 100%, it could have been, yeah.
Oh, fair enough. I had a hard time getting into this generally, to be honest. I think it was the puppetness of it all, like seeing puppets used in a non-ironic context, a context that wasn't Team America World Police, didn't work for me as much. But there were clearly some really good production values.
But we still got a montage, though.
Yeah, we got a montage. At some point, I wrote, in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. Doesn't this planet have the Beatles? Yes. And I don't know why I wrote that at the beginning of episode one. Can anyone remind me?
I think we can confirm that Ringo is, in fact, a podling, isn't he?
he could probably pass for one. That is true.
I think what I could get behind was the fact that, and I'm clearly just pulling like current events into this story, but it just felt like when the sexies came out as, did I just call them the sexies?
I meant sexies. I wasn't sure. One of our listeners got very pumped when he listened to the pitch in the last episode, because he says, oh, you're bringing Skeksy back.
That's right.
And I'm now managing a JT version of a Muppet singing that now. I'm bringing Skeksy back. Yeah. Oh, you other podlings don't know how to act. Yeah. You know, I'm just imagining that now. It's going to be pretty funny.
I would love to hear that.
That makes me feel worse about like my interpretation of this being some sort of the sexies being the deep state revealing itself and then ultimately talking about how they suck the life out of the dark crystal and then they sacrifice children. It felt like this led to the events of January 6th. Like this was very much an inspiration. Guards stealing stuff. Like it seemed like this inspired the Capitol riots. Am I really reaching here, or
if you think about it, you know, the people who instigated the riots, yes, 100%. The people who followed, well, you know, I there's a lot of contention as to whether or not, you know, that could be the case. But the fact that everyone that's on Thra doesn't really remember what happened, you know, 1,000 years ago, wherever it is, because
they're the sheeple. Yeah,
exactly. So they followed everyone that was basically leading the charge in that regard. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting, you know, comparison you could make there for sure.
1,000 trying to go right.
Yeah, it got creepy for me in weird ways, and that could very well be me reading into it. But there might be some intentionality, you know, because this was clearly before January 6th, but it just felt weird. Ultimately, I thought this was well done. I thought this was. They did a good job with it, but it wasn't something for me necessarily. I don't know. It didn't quite work.
No,
but
I definitely could see that. I mean, I think that there are some people that this is a big hurdle, because there are people that don't even like, you know, watching anime because like, oh, it's just a cartoon. It's for kids. I'm like, well, right. Not really.
Yeah. And I guess I don't mind watching anime, but this was just not as interesting for me. I recognize it was a good production. Like, and I actually, like, as I watched more of it, there was clearly a well-developed story, and this was thought out. I kept thinking about it as Puppet Game of Thrones, but
yeah,
ultimately,
that. Yeah, that's a good point.
But it wasn't enough to keep me going, unfortunately. I mean, especially with the weird. But everyone, maybe it's just me. Maybe every once in a while, I was like, "Is in episode one?" At some point, I had a note that said, "Starting to feel like an argument against taxation. Is this a libertarian production?" This is just. There is definitely some resistance going on. I don't know if this was the inspiration for you and I. This is maybe I'm getting too deep in here. Maybe like Deet, like the stuff that they put into Deet Woods Off, which is also the name of one of the characters, by the way. So it is, yeah. I feel like there's a Deet Woods Off conspiracy, maybe.
Is that a conspiracy thing?
No, I just made it up, so probably not. I don't think there's a conspiracy around Deet Woods Off, but hey, if we're gonna start it here, we might as well let's get ahead of Joe Rogan and just do it now.
Hey, you know, based on the other conspiracy theories that are out there, I would think some people could get behind.
The one thing that was super helpful about this is that, so I have a friend from Jersey who has another friend, and for some reason, like who would pop up on Facebook as someone they thought I should know for some reason, and their middle name was always listed as Gelfling for years. And I was like, that's a name for someone whose last name is O'Doyle. And I'm like, I just accepted it. Like, oh, her middle name's Gelfling. I think she's just really into the Dark Crystal. And now I know. And now I know that.
Oh, now this all makes sense.
Now you finally figured out what the meaning is of that name.
And I'm still never going to talk to this person because they were a friend of a friend who I barely talk to now.
There you go. Well,
that's all right. But yeah, that's cool, Nye. And I definitely understand where you're coming from. And it is certainly being okay and kind of getting a comfort level with the puppet world is certainly not for everyone. I was hoping, I guess, yeah, that you would like the fact that it was really strong writing and story development.
And you were 100% right. This voice cast is fire.
And the voice cast, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, and there were so many people that I didn't even recognize, like, you know, hearing their voices, for example. Like, it was like, you know, there are some people here. Shahzad Latif, who was most famously I'm not sure which episode he's in. I have to go back and look that up, but I was looking at the cast earlier and I'm like, wow, he was in this too. I'm like, because for those who don't know who Shahzad Latif is, he played a love interest of Captain Burnham in Discovery at one point, and he may, and there's rumors he may be involved in the new Section 31 show that might be coming in the future possibly as well. We'll have to see if that ends up panning out or not. But yeah, so I mean, he's in this, and like, you know, and Sky, you mentioned a lot of people: Alicia Vikander, Lena Headey, Andy Samberg, Keegan-Michael Key. You know, and the fact that Jason Isaacs is doing multiple voices in this was really amazing to me. And I think because I really could not tell that, you know, that both the Emperor and Skeksa were both Jason Isaacs. I couldn't tell. So, I mean, kudos to the cast here because they really got in their element. And so I really was digging everything.
Sorry, Dan, you said Shahzad Latif?
Yes.
You're telling me Clem Fandango was in this? Fandango?
Shahzad Latif is Clem Fandango? How did I never put that together?
Yes. That's the only way I know Shahzad Latif, that he is Clem Fandango from Toast of London.
This is all brilliant now. This is even more brilliant now.
Shut up, Clem Fandango.
Mind blown.
But you know, it's funny. I did appreciate that the voice cast was acting because I didn't recognize Natalie Emmanuel. Like, and Awkwafina, yeah. You mentioned that she was in it with some disdain, Scott. I don't know why you're mad at Awkwafina, but I listened to it. I was like, I don't know where she is in this. So I appreciate the fact that everyone's actually acting. That was really cool. It wasn't like that sketch from John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch where this group for the animated movie and they just recognize all the random actors and the kid just shouts out Mandy Patinkin randomly. Yes. I heard him and I said, that's our Mandy. I appreciate they were doing a good job with the voice cast, but that didn't sell it for me, unfortunately, still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and some of them, I think because there's just such a big cast, each of those people, even though they're fairly famous in their own rights, might have had just very small roles in this show. Like, Awkwafina was one of the Skeksis, but yeah, it was hard to tell them all apart.
They list her as the collector.
Yeah. Right, right. Which, I think it's fine that you're not able to pull those folks out, because it means they're really diving into the roles. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Like, the fact that it was puppets didn't pull me in, unless, because I'm used to, like, you know, Team America World Police, like Avenue Q puppets. So the
yep, Yep. There actually was, I had forgotten this when I watched it before, but that there was a puppet like kissing scene in the first episode.
Right.
Didn't quite go as far as Team America World Police, but they still had some puppet romance in there.
That's true. Creeped me out with the puppet stuff actually was the puppets with their mouths sewn shut.
Yeah, that was really
real dark and creepy.
This is puppets. Again, you think that this is definitely more driven towards kids, but yeah, that was like one dark, super dark thing. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I was just saying, it was super dark. I just couldn't believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Skeksis are scary. Like they're some pretty kind of.
Scary. They're grotesque.
Yeah, they're grotesque. They're scary. Obviously, they're supposed to be just terrible creatures in general.
And decomposing. I mean, full disclosure, if you've not watched this yet from the pitch before, and you are squeamish about various different bodily fluids that might be emanating from certain places, then you may want to basically not eat during or not eat before, whatever your preference is, just full disclosure. So
and the fact, you know, that they literally are draining the life out of the dark crystal and some of the creatures that live on
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, they're all in villains for sure.
I didn't find them scary per se. I just found them gross, which I mean that's enough of a turnoff, certainly. But I wasn't overly the one thing that did freak me out out of the two episodes I saw was the puppets with their mouths sewn shut. That was creepy.
Yeah, that was
but super in terms creepy. Of the Skeksis themselves, I could take them. That's why I felt it.
I kind of understand a lot of different plot points here, basically. And obviously, some take more extreme actions as to what they're doing, you know, leaving the order when she's supposed to be there, for example. That's one thing. But I think the one thing that I wondered about was when Gurgin was helping to allow for Rian's escape, why didn't they just go for the trope of basically Rian, quote unquote, punching him and getting away? And this way, Gurgin would not have been implicated as a collaborator.
Oh, because Gurgin's J.J. Abrams, right?
That is 100% fair.
And you know, another interesting twist to that possible connection is both the Jim Henson Company and Star Wars are now owned by Disney.
Yes.
So this was on Netflix.
True.
Right.
God.
I know it is all a conspiracy. You're right.
Yeah, this is the deep state, like you're saying, man. Deep state.
Just like Deep Woods Off.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. This is Deep Woods Off. 100%.
It all comes together.
It all comes together. And one of the things that I did use in promoting the last episode, it was that I did come up with an alternate episode title after the fact, which I did love your episode title, but I had to name it Come At Me Thra.
There you go.
Because I just like that's all I could think about when he said Thra. I'm like, Thra. I guess if you were to have relations in front of the dark crystal, that could be considered a menage a Thra.
You know?
No longer TVPG.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. I have to say that took did that take a lot of thought?
No, that one I actually did not have notes about. That came on the spot, believe it or not. So yeah,
that is impressive. Did you have a favorite character? Either one of you?
Ooh, good question.
Not really. No one jumped out at me. They all kind of blended together a little bit. Maybe Brea. She seemed to be interesting.
Yeah, Brea seemed very interesting to me. On you know the non. Other character perspective, you know, as far as I definitely want to see more from the Grand Madre, because I feel like that she's obviously very complex, because she's struggling with the same thing her older daughter is trying to struggle with, is that she has this public versus private body that she's trying to balance here, because you know she has this love for her daughters and whatnot, but she still needs to balance the needs of the state. And seeing that, you know, that one little moment where she kind of was struggling with that and almost decided to neglect her duties for just even a moment. And then she had to be, her daughter had to bring her back in line. I thought that was really kind of neat. And there's a story that's underneath there that is not explicitly told vis-a-vis, you know, her family and her upbringing and whatnot. And I don't know if they would get into that at all later, but you know, that's something that I would have loved to know as far on a lore perspective, in that it's kind of interesting to see how people get oldest sons, daughters get forced into roles sometimes, especially in a monarchist like system. And this is what, you know, becomes of them, you know, and sometimes you have very accomplished, you know, progeny, and sometimes you have people that might be more like Beavis and Butthead. So
that is very true.
I mean, there was no TP for anyone's cornholio, so I don't know.
Not that I'm aware of. But and I thought it was cool though how that whole Gelfling society is matriarchal.
Yes,
and how that would they kind of took a little bit of a different approach with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was really just drawn to this series and really enjoyed it because it was just it used puppets in a way that was very different and still tried to combine like just puppets with a fantasy story and building a world from the ground up in this case, because I guess this is supposed to set up the movie The Dark Crystal, which comes later.
Right.
But unfortunately, there will not be any further seasons. They decided one season was the end. I think partially because this series is so labor intensive to make.
That was my final question, actually, was about that.
I thought I read the Wikipedia article, which I don't know if the sources are accurate. It made it sound like they were going to try and do something, but not at Netflix. Like they were going to be able to maybe get it produced somewhere else. But I could be wrong. That truly was just me scanning the Wikipedia article.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Disney Plus makes sense now, but we'll see. But yeah, I can imagine. And if you watch any of the documentary as well, which I think I mentioned in the pitch about how they made the show, you just get some idea of the massive amount of set designing and with all the different puppets and their movements and going through all of those scenes with, you know, very little special effects, at least while for the major parts of it, that it would take, you know, significant time and money and involvement to continue the show. But if they do, that would be interesting.
No, I definitely agree. I mean, again, I'm none of, you know, Nine's not going to continue, but I'm going to probably continue this, and I'll be anxiously looking to see how the story progresses and then see, you know, how much I'm ready to commit some sort of insurrection to get the next iteration of this.
Will you join the resistance?
Well, where Dan goes, we all go, or whatever that is.
Well, again, do you hear the people? Do you hear the people singing the songs of angry men? You know, or in this case, angry Skeksis, angry Podlings. Your choice.
Yes. All right. Thank you, guys.
That's what we thought.
Hey all, welcome back. It's Dan, and I'm back with another pitch for Scott and Ian. Back during episode 26, we had stand-up, Return to Comedy. I decided I wanted to throw a comedy special in every now and then, so here we go. Now, I know Ian generally enjoys stand-up, so this initially would make logical sense, what I'm about to pitch. Based on Scott's feedback about topical cohesion with regard to comedy specials, I have also decided to push the envelope a little bit. This week, we're going to be talking about the offbeat 2021 Bo Burnham special, Inside, available on Netflix. For those of you who don't know who Bo Burnham is, he actually rose up in popularity on YouTube and then became a fully touring musical comedy artist and whatnot. Most recently, in the last Netflix special he did, called Make Happy in 2016, he began to experience panic attacks on stage. And so this was kind of, he kind of wanted to take a break for a while, kind of reconnect with himself and whatnot. And then, of course, COVID happened. And that's how we kind of get where this is. So Netflix also labels this as offbeat. I thought this was offbeat, but they also label this explicitly in their algorithm there. And that's a perfect adjective, I think. Now, while this is distinctly a Bo Burnham special, at the same time, it's different. And I feel that this special might push some buttons and could really go either way for you. The reasons are the following. This is not a traditional stand-up setting, and it's not filmed in front of a live studio audience. This was actually made in his guest home during COVID by himself. So he did 100% of everything with this. Two, it's mostly music, which can really go either way for the two of you, since this is not, but keep in mind, this is not John Mulaney. Three, the subject matter is introspective and definitely hits a pandemic vibe. Might make you or others feel watching different or possibly even uncomfortable. For Scott, the lack of dedication to a single topic is definitely going to be challenging. Five, because of the Kerouac wannabe influence of the Ansari special we spoke about. Nine, you may find this either interesting or not. So another option there. And finally, some of the lyrics are definitely in the more abstract or subtle territory, and some might go beyond people's heads when they're watching this. So here's a big question. Why am I focusing so much on these reasons you might not like it? Aren't I supposed to be wholly shilling or shipping, extolling the high virtue of the streaming opus? Perhaps. The real reason I'm pitching this is I want to hear Scott's and Nine thoughts on a not-so-strictly laugh-out-loud comedy special, as I feel that watching some things, especially out of comfort zones, not only allows ourselves some time for introspection, but usually provides a somewhat articulate discourse during the feedback session. It could open my eyes, don't you know? After all that, I'm sure you have questions. Let them rip.
All right. I have heard a lot about Bo Burnham recently, just in various things, I guess, that he's been involved in, but I've never actually seen anything that he's been in. So I'm very interested to take this on, especially since it's focused on him exclusively. And as you said, as Netflix says, it's a little offbeat, might make it a little bit different than a usual comedy special. So that sounds interesting.
So this has actually been on my list for a while. I just kept putting it off. Yeah, the reason I was avoiding it was I heard it was brilliant. Kate was on board as well, but it was so COVID centric that we were just like, we live this. Like, why would we want to watch more COVID stuff? So that's why we've been avoiding it. But this is the time, Dan. You've thrown down the gauntlet. We need to face our fears and watch the Bo Burnham special. And I am a Bo Burnham fan, by the way. He has written one of the most perfect songs I've ever heard, I feel like, I think it's called I Am an Artist. He played it on an episode of Paul Provenza's The Green Room, and it reminded me of someone you've been in an a cappella group with, Dan. One very specific person.
You can tell me off air.
I will tell you off air.
To prick the guilty or innocent, depending on how they are.
But like, he just nailed it, like, in terms of the pretentiousness of artists. And I also, he was in the movie Promising Young Woman, and he was really good in that. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
I did not see that, actually.
Nope. That's on HBO Max. It is excellent. Carey Mulligan. We're not pitching Promising Young Woman. I can, if you'd like. Excellent. And Bo Burnham did a good job in it. It was more of a dramatic role, so it was a bit of a shift for him. But the stuff I've seen him in, like, he's been so good. So I'm actually psyched to see this. And thank you for forcing my hand, because it's been sitting in the Netflix queue for a while now. We just never got around to it. But in terms of, so me, I forget, I'm not sure if you already covered this, I apologize, but no. What drew you to this generally? Like, what kind of brought this to you on your radar and was like, this is the thing I'm going to watch, outside of like doing more comedy specials and stuff?
That was the comedy special was the first thing that had me browsing through Netflix and other streaming services, first of all. And I was looking for something that, you know, that would be something a little bit different, you know, not that that was the first thing that kind of brought me, you know, just be wading through the queues, if you will. And then when I came across, you know, Bo Burnham, I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't seen the special of his in quite a long time. And then I kind of went back and I said, well, when was that special? Because honestly, I can't remember how far back that was. And I'm like, oh, it was 2016. I'm like, wow, it's been a while. When I was watching, you know, Make Happy back then, it didn't really, you know, fully absorb at the time that he was having these panic attacks and whatnot. And I didn't really understand, you know, the reason. I didn't fully comprehend or understand the reason for the hiatus, because I don't breathe, eat, and sleep Bo all the time, mind you. I do appreciate all the lovely little recaps and dubs they do on TikTok, obviously. But at the same time, I wasn't really, as you know, fully fledged with that. And so as soon as I saw a little bit of the history and everything behind that, it kind of said, you know, I do want to see the special, because A, it's Bo Burnham, but B, it's like, I think that this is gonna definitely speak to some of my mindset. Because again, you know, even we're still in the pandemic as of the time this recording, and I wanted something that was a little bit introspective for me also as well, just because, you know, I have my own, you know, personal demons that I deal with, obviously everyone does. And I think that, you know, I was hoping to find something that was going to make me turn an eye on myself at the same time as I maybe might, you know, chuckle or laugh or even want to start singing along in some cases. So yeah, that's kind of what drew me into this, is just really kind of the nature of the setting of what this is.
Got it. Fair enough. Cause it definitely did seem like something that was a bit of a different approach to a stand-up special. So as opposed to just sort of a straightforward stand-up special, like the Aziz Ansari special. So no, it's fair. I'm definitely psyched to actually finally get this on my list. If nothing else.
One less thing out of the queue, as I said. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing from your description that there is no audience in.
Correct. Yeah, this is everything was filmed in the guest house. If you look up like the cast and crew list, it's pretty much just Bo, and then all the producing stuff was maybe done by other people, but all the quote unquote, you know, arrangements, cinematography, filming, that's all him.
Okay.
So and there is a little behind the scenes that you get within the span of it. So it's not just him strictly just editing clips of him recording stuff. There's definitely a little bit more behind that, because again, you know, one of the natures of performance, and I think, you know, I think as, you know, someone who's, you know, been involved in the profession, so to speak, you know, performance is such an interesting conundrum for a lot of people out there, both the performers and the people who view them. In that regard, you know, there's a lot that people don't see. You know, not everyone's a method actor, say, a la Jared Leto, or, you know, or they all have different approaches. And I think that someone who is gifted musically and also uses that in conjunction with comedy, you don't know what's going on behind that laugh, behind that smile, behind that hilariously and possibly funny lyric. And I think that for me is like, it brings a realness to things. And I think that, you know, I think it's important to be able to be in touch with everything emotionally. And again, people, different things evoke emotions of different people. So you could watch this special and just think it was funny. And then there are people that say, you know what, it was funny, but you know, this one thing got to me. And I think that's really what I think kind of transcends just, you know, a 10 to 15 minute stand-up set at like the Laugh Factory or you know, the Comedy Cellar, versus, you know, something that, you know, might have a more lasting and deep effect upon the people who watched it.
So it's the emotional journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
The potential a lot of it,
you know, stems from that. Yeah.
No, fair enough. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a trip. I'm psyched for it.
I am intrigued to see what it's like. I don't think I've ever seen a comedy special without an audience.
Yeah, and it is. Keep in mind, this is going to be longer than the very short Aziz Ansari special. So this is a little bit on the longer side. I think that it's definitely worth the trip.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.